while regulated militia be necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Hopefully you had a good Memorial Day weekend. Ready for a four-day week. Mario the Rooster's ready. I swear, he was halfway across the yard not more than 30 seconds ago. He hears me talking. It's like he has to run over and be my sidekick. All right. Today's guest is not going to be a rooster. No, it's going to be Jim Wallace of the Gun Owners Action League up in Massachusetts. We'll be talking with Jim here in just a moment or two. Over the weekend, Boston.com had this story. Committee forms to protect Massachusetts gun laws from upcoming ballot question. Love the framing of this, by the way, right? Protect Massachusetts gun laws. Advocates established a campaign in response to a ballot question committee calling to repeal the 2024 state gun regulation law. Which, I mean, I guess is one way of saying it, right? Another way of framing this would be committee forms to defend law impacting law-abiding gun owners in Massachusetts. And as a matter of fact, the law-abiding gun owners outside of the state of Massachusetts as well. What I find really fascinating about this is that it's not particularly new news that the Vote Yes for a Safe Massachusetts campaign has launched. In fact, it started, I guess, back on May the 12th, right? So we've not only heard about the formation of the campaign, we've heard about the ethics inquiry that the Civil Rights Coalition has demanded because Massachusetts Attorney General Andrea Campbell gave about $50,000 to a group called the Massachusetts Coalition to Prevent Gun Violence, which is run by a woman named Ruth Zacharin, who just so happens to be the committee chair for Vote Yes for a Safe Massachusetts campaign. Interestingly enough, the Boston.com story detailing the formation of this campaign to defend Chapter 135 does not mention the ethics inquiry that Toby Leary and the Civil Rights Coalition have requested. Regarding the Attorney General's donation, they spoke to Toby Leary, they spoke to Jim Wallace, and they didn't quote Jim Wallace about any of the concerns that that Goal and other groups have had regarding Chapter 135. The lack of information coming from officials regarding the enforcement of Chapter 135. Now, you will recall, of course, that this law. I swear to God, that rooster. You will recall that Chapter 135. Was originally supposed to take effect like the end of last October, but Governor Maury Healey signed an emergency preamble 2 months after signing the bill into law, by the way, that put into effect immediately in order to keep the law on the books and enforced while this ballot question is percolating. Right. If she had not done that, well, the Coalition for Civil Rights had obtained enough signatures that the law would have been suspended until voters had a chance to act on it in November of 2026. And the anti-gunners didn't want that. So instead, Maury Healey signs this emergency preamble 2 months after she originally signs the bill into law and then immediately suspends large portions of that law for 18 months. I mean, the way this bill was written, the way this bill became a law and the way this law has been enforced is infuriating. And it is one of the reasons I think why gun owners in Massachusetts are so livid about this. It's not just the infringement on the right to keep and bear arms, it's the process of how this has happened. And again, the disinterest on the part of far too many media outlets to pay attention to what's really going on here, both behind the scenes and frankly, in broad daylight. But we're not like most of those Massachusetts media outlets. We do care about the process. We do care about the lack of answers. And we do care about what this law means for lawful gun owners, which is why we sat down with Jim Wallace, head of the Gun Owners Action League, and had a conversation about those topics and more. Take a look and a listen. Jim, thanks so much for coming to the program. It's good to see you again, my friend.
Welcome back to the Second Amendment battleground state. And I got to tell you, the battle's just getting worse and worse every day here.
Boy, it really is. I mean, you know, Chapter 135, major portions of this law are not yet in effect, even though Governor Maury Healey signed this emergency preamble to put the law into effect immediately. Then she turned around and suspended a lot of the provisions of the law because they're not ready for prime time. And that was several months ago, Jim. But, I mean, as you guys are pointing out at the Gun Owners Action League, it is still impossible to get answers from the state about how this law is going to work. So you guys published a piece a couple of days ago. Safari Club International gets no answers on non-resident hunting concerns, right? So this was, what, last November, SEI right. sent a letter to the yeah. Attorney General asking, okay, so how's this going to work when it comes to out-of-state hunters, juvenile hunters, wanting to know that the hunting access is going to remain open? And okay, so it's been over 6 months now, yeah. and radio yeah. silence from Attorney General Andrea Campbell's office.
Well, the other thing that's happened, Cam, is we were getting some so-called official guidance from yeah. the Secretary of Public Safety. That stopped in November as well. We haven't got any official guidance from the Secretary since then. Even though the Firearm Control Advisory Board, which I unfortunately sit on, has dealt with several issues. One of them is the long gun roster, which we just put out a piece about that the FCAB basically, you know, advised the Secretary, you're not going to test long guns like you test handguns. It just isn't going to work. Although I really would like to see somebody drop test a bolt action 458 Magnum just to see what happens. But, you know, but we were told by the public safety attorney who sits on the board as well, yep, Secretary's on board. We're not going to do a roster. Okay, have you put out any official guidance? Well, no, we have the memo from the FCAB. Well, the FCAB is only advisory, and we always tell people that. So unless it comes from the Secretary,
by name, it's an advisory board.
Yes, absolutely. And even if it does come from the Secretary, I don't know if it's defensible. You know, it's just guidance, they call it. So we are pretty convinced that we will not see any more guidance. And we believe the reason why is because every time they do it, they weaken the law. And they are so frustrated with their inability to explain the law without weakening it, you know, that I believe there's just a plan to stop doing it.
Wow. You know, I wonder, too, if they're not a little concerned about anything they say now could be used against them in the lawsuit that has still been filed. Right? I mean, it's not really moving forward at the moment, but Goal has filed litigation, right?
Well, it's interesting because the first two we did, they immediately suspended those parts of the law.
Yeah.
So we still had to spend the money to get the case, you know, ready to file. And in the first instance, it was about training, and we already had it filed. Now, here's an interesting little sneaky thing that the Attorney General did. When they suspended the training for 18 months or until the state police can get this stuff up and running, we said, okay, we're going to suspend our court action. And the AG filed a document wanting it dismissed with prejudice.
So you couldn't file again?
So we couldn't file it again. And we're like, wait a minute, prejudice? What do you mean? Nothing's even been decided here. So, you know, we were successful in fighting that off. So the next one was the long gun testing and roster, which would have made a roster of approved long guns. And we spent the money, prepared the case, announced we were about to file it, and almost immediately they suspended that part of the law. So it's like whack-a-mole up here. And our members are frustrated. We're frustrated. You know, how come you're not filing more lawsuits? Well, every time we do, they suspend it. So we're wasting, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to get these cases going. And then the state just says, well, we don't really feel like doing that right now.
That is, you know, yeah, the shadiness, Chapter 135, I mean, started when that bill is being drafted. And it continued, you know, throughout the passage of this bill. And now that the bill's become law, they're still playing games. I mean, it's amazing to me the abuses of the legislative system, the parliamentary system, the legal system that the state of Massachusetts is engaged in to, as you say, you know, put this law on the books, even though it has been weakened through the efforts of Second Amendment organizations like the Gun Owners Action League. I mean, they are doing everything they can to try to make this as bad as possible for gun owners.
Well, here's another beauty, and you should have Toby on about this one. I think you've had him on about the coalition and the ballot question.
Yeah.
Well, about 2 months ago, maybe, the Massachusetts Attorney General announced $1 million worth of grants to groups to combat gun violence. One of them was the Massachusetts group. And all of a sudden, they had the money to start a committee to fight our ballot question.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Yeah. You know? And I know the Civil Rights Coalition has filed an ethics complaint against the Attorney General and has said that they'll sue if the depending on what the results of the Ethics Commission investigation is. Do you know, Jim? I mean, does the Ethics Commission have any sort of statutory deadline to investigate and come out with a ruling, or can they just sit on that?
I don't even know if the Ethics Commission has any authority over the Attorney General.
Okay.
Because what people don't, and there's no reason people would know this, I'm not exactly sure where the money come from, but I have a hunch.
Yeah.
The Attorney General's office in Massachusetts, let's say, if they sue a company, they did this a while back. They sued CVS because they didn't like how they were filling prescriptions for narcotics. Even though they were following the law, they didn't like it. And CVS, like most people, just settled out of court. They paid $100,000 to the Attorney General. That money does not go back into the general fund. That money goes into a slush fund for the Attorney General to spend pretty much any way they want. So
that's
grants. Grants are constantly given out to groups that will support her reelection. That happens all the time.
Jeez, man, it just gets worse and worse the more we talk about this stuff, Jim. All right, so
Elon, we need Elon.
I would love to see the results of that. Because the deep state is awfully entrenched there in Massachusetts.
Well, you remember when I started 24 years ago for Goal, the state budget was $17 billion. This year, it's $62 billion. 24 years later. That's only what's on the budget.
Yeah. Yeah. You
know? So.
So what is your message to gun owners right now? I mean, as you say, the lawsuits are sort of suspended until you guys have standing. I mean, honestly, and that's what I want people to understand. This is not that you guys are sitting on your hands because, you know, you decided you got better things to do. There's no point in moving forward. A judge is going to say you guys aren't harmed right now, so I'm not going to bother to weigh in on an injunction because these things aren't being enforced. You got to wait until these laws are actually in effect, or at least close to being in effect, before a judge will even take a look at your argument. The Civil Rights Coalition is obviously working to educate gun owners and non-gun owners, quite frankly, before the elections next year. What's your recommendation to gun owners who want to get involved? They want to do something to stand up for their rights right now.
Yeah. You know, what it's boiling down to, Kim, and we really have to think about how we're going to make this happen. The bottom line is we're trying all the traditional methods to seek, you know, relief. It ain't working. We have all three branches of government, including the judiciary in the state, working against us. And we saw that in the Donnell and the Marquis decisions with non-resident licensing. They wrote those two decisions at the very same time and referred to one another as they were writing it. I mean, if that's not the courts misusing their authority, what is? I have no idea. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to think about some strategies here. And, I hate to say this, but we're going to have to learn a little bit from the left. And I don't want to hear about threats or property damage. We have to start making their lives uncomfortable. And I think that's the only way we're going to get attention, is if we make their lives uncomfortable. You know, Maura Healey, I don't care if she shows up to open a grocery store. We got to start being there. The problem is we can't use paid protesters. like other people do.
Right.
Our people work for a living, you know, sometimes two jobs to make ends meet. But we've got to have that discussion. And honestly, the Second Amendment community, for the most part, has never had to do this. So kind of that level of civil protest is new to us. But we'll figure it out. Yeah. And there's one thing, you know, our community can do is adapt, right? You know, we adapted from muskets to what we have now. And we can certainly adapt to this. It's a whole new world, especially in a world, as you know, that trying to catch somebody's attention online, you have 1/6 of a second
right.
to get their attention and then try to get them to do something. So,
I'm curious. I mean, we've seen the DOJ say that they are, you know, actively investigating like the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department. They're looking at, concealed carry wait times in Washington, D.C. Have you thought about, and we've seen, you know, like Elise Stefanik and I think Claudia Tenney, representatives from New York, asked the DOJ to take a look at New York gun laws. Have you thought about asking the DOJ Civil Rights Division to come in and investigate Massachusetts' abuses of the rights?
Yeah, we're actually starting to put that together now.
Okay.
But as you can imagine, those people are drinking from a fire hose.
Yeah.
So you're trying to get somebody's attention that so are a million other people trying to get their attention right now
right.
because there's so many people seeking relief from corrupt government officials that it's, you know, you're just a whisper in a hurricane at this point. Doesn't mean we ain't going to try because we are. I would love to have them get in here and start investigating some of the stuff that we've had to deal with. And the fact that there's no answers. You know, we continue to say that. There's no answers to this stuff. Even the police cam are frustrated as hell. We don't know what we're supposed to be doing. And unfortunately, with the non-resident issues, which the Second Amendment Foundation is handling that, and they're preparing a case for that for us as part of our national strategy. But there's a club in Northeast Massachusetts called Minuteman, huge clay club. And they used to run the championships for the state of New Hampshire and the state of Maine. They had to cancel them. They're afraid to come in here with their guns. Yeah. And I brought this up at the last FCAB meeting, and I was told, well, no, see, there's an exemption that if you're at a range and you're under the supervision of, you know, somebody who has a license to carry, okay, but how does the competitor get his shotgun to the range?
Right.
No answer.
Yeah.
So basically, it's sad, but we have to tell people right now, unless you have a Massachusetts temporary license to carry as a non-resident, don't come here with a gun, period. Because we know that that certainly affects handguns and semi-automatics, especially for hunting. But there is no exemption for traveling into the state. There's an exemption for traveling through, but not into the state. And it's all these little things that we keep pointing out because we know every town was the one who wrote this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Massachusetts legislature didn't write this. This was a wish list from every town. So, you know, here we are, and we're going to continue to battle through it. The other thing, Cam, I'll tell you, even people who I wouldn't have expected this from, the one danger we're seeing is that the state's losing people by the day. They just don't care anymore because they know if the state wants them, they got them. You can't comply. You can't. It's impossible because it can be interpreted in so many different ways. All you need is an aggressive district attorney, which that's happening already.
Yeah.
And we'll have news on that probably within the week.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's people are just giving up and just saying, you know what? I'm going to do what I think I need to do and the hell with them. And that's not what you want as a society.
Yeah.
But here we are.
Here we are. All right. Well, listen, Jim, when you've got news on the abuses that you're seeing there at the local level, please come back and share them with us, will you, please?
Absolutely.
All right. In the meantime, if you are a gun owner in Massachusetts or outside Massachusetts, you can join the fight. Just go to goal.org and get in the game. They are doing fantastic work there defending the right to keep your arms, what little remains in the state of Massachusetts, and trying to claw back those rights that have been lost. Jim Wallace, as always, my friend, thanks so much for spending some time with us. Look forward to doing this again soon.
All right, Kim.
My thanks to Jim for joining me on the program. We will have, hopefully, an update for you on the request for the ethics investigation here in a couple of weeks. I am guessing there's not going to be an investigation. That's my prediction, but I would love to be proven wrong. All right, turning our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there. Again, not a true recidivist case. I believe this individual a first-time offender, but it is one of those sentences that leaves you scratching your head. Because we are told that straw purchases are a big deal, right? If you buy a gun for somebody who's not eligible to own one, that, I mean, it's punishable by up to 10 years in federal prison if you are charged at the federal level. And yet, here's the headline. Firearms purchase leads to 2 years of probation for Phillips County, Arkansas woman. The woman in question, 26-year-old Darnisha Janae Lee of Helena, West Helena, indicted by a federal grand jury in Little Rock in March of last year, charged with making a false statement while acquiring firearms from a federal firearms licensee, a charge that, again, could carry up to 10 years in prison. On January 24th, Lee pled guilty before U.S. District Judge Lee Radofsky for a superseding indictment that had been returned on December 3rd of last year, charging with one count of making a false statement to records, which carries a maximum penalty of 5 years in prison, according to the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Radofsky, according to the paper, calculated Lee's recommended sentence guideline at 10 to 16 months in prison and 1 to 3 years on supervised release. Although federal sentencing guidelines allowed for between 1 and 5 years on probation, under the sentencing guidelines, Lee was not eligible for probation. So sentencing her to 2 years probation required the judge to vary downward from the guidelines. Lee's attorney, Assistant Federal Public Defender Kristen Green, and Assistant U.S. Attorney Reese Lancaster both recommended a sentence of 2 years on probation. Green argued that Lee has no prior criminal history and she committed the offense out of family loyalty, saying, quote, she's a family woman. She's a mother. She's deeply rooted to her community. Part of those deep roots in the community, her family, is why she's here today. The reason Ms. Lee has a criminal history today is that deep connection to her family. Well, I'm sure if you ask every straw purchaser why they did what they did, almost all of them are going to have good reasons, right? I trusted the individual. I loved the individual. This person was family. This person was a friend. I needed the money so I could put, food on the table so I could buy medicine for my baby, right? I mean, you're going to get all kinds of good excuses. But the reality is that Lee bought guns for two convicted felons. A gentleman named Kyle McIntosh and her brother, Justin Lee. According to court records, Lee told agents that McIntosh and her brother picked her up from her home, showed her a picture of the guns that they wanted her to buy, and then drove her to the pawn shop where she purchased the firearms with her brother's credit card, by the way. December, this was, I guess, back in 2020 when the purchase was actually made, because December 5th, 2020, McIntosh was arrested and had one of the guns on him in Memphis. Justin Lee was arrested February 9th, 2021, just more than 2 months later, with a gun, that gun that was purchased in his possession. So, again, within 6 months of buying these guns for family, they're both arrested on, it sounds like, additional charges, and that they happen to find the guns on them. The judge expressed concern that a probationary sentence could send the wrong message to others, that straw purchases of firearms is not a serious enough crime to warrant prison time. And frankly, the judge should have stuck by his guns, no pun intended. But Radofsky, citing Lee's lack of criminal history, educational goals, and strong family ties, which again, I would seem to be a cut against her, not in favor. Radofsky said he believed that the recommended sentence would be sufficient to address all issues except general deterrence. He said the idea there is you want to give a sentence that is going to send the message to people looking in from the community that they can't do this. If people are circumventing background checks by purchasing guns for people who shouldn't have guns, that's a huge problem. The assistant U.S. attorney, arguing in favor of a probationary sentence, said Ms. Lee is someone who has an associate's degree. She's a senior in college, now having status as a felon. It'll prevent them from ever being able to lawfully purchase firearms ever again. So that status of being a felon, losing that right, That is, in my opinion, a general deterrent for others, as well as Ms. Lee, because she'll never be able to legally possess or purchase a firearm ever again. Now, I don't know that that's actually the case. You know, I think the Supreme Court is actually wrestling with this, or soon will wrestle with this. Does there need to be a particular finding of dangerousness? Does a nonviolent felony, like engaging in a straw purchase, automatically deprive you of your ability to purchase a firearm for yourself further down the road? The DOJ is now starting this process where people can apply to have their rights restored. So that's an opportunity for Ms. Lee. I don't know that it's fair to say that she has forevermore lost her ability to own a firearm. She might have to take some additional steps. Some things might have to change. But I think there's every possibility that she could regain her ability to once again legally purchase a firearm. And I got to say again, I just have a real issue with this. On the one hand, we are told these are serious offenses. On the other hand, we're going to make excuses for people who engage in this serious offense. I agree with the judge. This undercuts the general deterrence argument that, you know, hey, you do the crime, you're going to do some time. And again, you can find all kinds of good excuses, all kinds of justification if you're looking. It's whether or not you think that really matters, I guess, at the end of the day, right? Oh, can I sentence this rooster to prison? 10 years. No probation, no early release. Maybe just send us him to stew. How about that? All right, let's turn our attention now to today's armed citizen story from the Chicagoland area, where the Chicago Sun-Times reports no charges for a shooter in a Roseland double homicide sparked by an argument over cheese. Yeah. So, authorities in Cook County said on Friday that they will not be filing murder charges against a person who allegedly fatally shot two men at a Roseland restaurant last week, saying that he acted in self-defense. The shooting sparked by an argument over what kind of cheese was being put on a customer's sandwich at Momtie's Grill on Monday afternoon. According to a Chicago police report, an employee became upset with a customer who was yelling at her about the cheese. The woman then called her son to the restaurant. When the son came, a group of men also entered the restaurant. Two of them then hit the son in the face. The son then ran out of the restaurant, chased by the men. According to the Chicago Sun-Times, shots rang out. Responding officers found two men, Dexter Williams and Monty Potts, with multiple gunshot wounds. Police reports said that the son was, quote, responsible for at least one of the deaths. He had checked himself into a Roseland hospital in good condition, placed into police custody, but an assistant state's attorney declined to pursue charges, saying that he acted in self-defense, according to the police report. So apparently that decision was made very early on. According to an emailed statement from the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, the evidence was, quote, insufficient. Statement saying insufficient to meet the burden of proof required to file criminal charges at this time. We remain committed to reviewing any additional information related to this matter that is brought to us. And again, that's all we know right now. But it sounds, again, like the determination was made very early on that this individual was acting in self-defense. We don't know. It sounds to me like mom called the son. Maybe the store employee called his buddies. They showed up. And again, like, over cheese. Over cheese. This is one of those stories, you know, frankly, so many of these defensive gun use stories never had happened if people just would have not escalated the situation. Right? I mean, how many road rage stories have we talked about where if somebody had just taken a deep breath, driven down the road, they'd be alive today. But no, they had to go and attack somebody because they didn't like the way they were driving. Again, this is one of those instances where people had just taken a deep breath, calmed down, had a reasonable discussion over the cheese that was being put on a sandwich. Two men might be alive today. But instead, sounds like this... call it a beef, I guess would be a misnomer. Anyway, escalated to the point of violence and to the point where this individual, woman's son, who again, why did mom call her son to a restaurant to begin with? I don't know. But it sounded like it escalated to the point where he was acting in defense of his life. We will keep our eyes open for any more details to this story, and it may be that there's more information that becomes available. But as of right now, this does appear, again, to be a case of self-defense. There in the Chicagoland area. And finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A woman in Jacksonville, Florida, who helped save the life of a 77-year-old woman who went into cardiac arrest while on a busy road Joyce Long was on her way to a doctor's appointment. She started to have a heart attack behind the wheel. Her daughter, Jennifer Long, said the outcome could have been tragic if not for the heroic actions of another driver named Ratonia Watts. Jennifer Long telling News 4 Jacksonville, had she not stopped that day, my mom would not be here. Clearly, she would not be alive. So when Joyce Long started suffering that cardiac event, her car started to drift through heavy traffic. Some people were honking their horns, you know, thinking, what is this lady doing? But Ratonia Watts noticed that something was wrong and pulled over as Joyce Long's car managed to coast to a stop. Thankfully, again, the car did stop. Jennifer Long said she's barely able to drive because she's having chest pains. She's in the process of cardiac arrest. She said Mrs. Watts was just passing by, blew her horn, and then something told her to stop. Ratonia Watts spoke to News 4 Jacksonville as well. She said her instincts and her faith took over. She said, when she turned off the car, I started screaming. I got out of my car and asked, are you okay? Are you okay? When I said that, she shook her head and said no. And when she said no, she passed out. So Watts called 911. She did not know CPR. So she relied on the power of prayer. She said, I laid my hands on her and said, hold on. God's got you. She said, rescue came quickly. It was destined for me to be there that particular time. Paramedics arrived. They shocked Long's heart twice. They performed CPR three times before she started to breathe on her own, before she got her pulse back. According to News 4 Jacksonville, doctors have since told the Long family that Joyce Long's survival is nothing short of miraculous. And she recorded a message, Joyce Long did, from the hospital, I guess, to Mrs. Watts. She said, I appreciate you helping me in my time of need. I don't know what happened to me. I became incapacitated, but you were a great help to me. You asked me a couple of times if I was okay, and I told you no. You helped me out and contacted my family, and I just want to say thank you. You were a blessing to me. Watts says that she just thanks God. She says, nobody knows me anything. But in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Ratonia Watts there in Jacksonville, Florida. We thank you for your very good and miraculous deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your 2A Tuesday. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com. We'll have the latest 2A information from across the nation for you all day long and tomorrow as well. And if you like what you see, I would encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Just use the promo code FIGHT and you can get 60% off your membership. You'll get all kinds of benefits no matter what tier of support you choose. But any tier, you're going to be supporting the independent pro-sec member journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms. We certainly do appreciate that. So thank you again. All right, we'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.